An extremely interesting nitziv in Parshas Toldos about Jews and the descendants of Esav, Western civilization, Christians, assuming for the same the similarity, overlap between the two, certainly historically there is, and by omission or by comparison, Jews and Muslims. So very interesting nitziv, more panoramic, more historical, in typical fashion to the nitziv. There are two nitzivs. I'll discuss the nitziv in Toldos. There's I call it a sequel nitziv in Parshas Vayishlach. Of course, it's a sequel because it's about Yaakov's name, and Yaakov's name changes in Vayishlach based on the encounter with Esav's mysterious person the night before the encounter with Esav. And then there's a Rashi that I'll just try to draw by analogy. So Yaakov is referred to as Yaakov first in this week's Parsha in Toldos, because he's grasping Esav's ankle, V'yodo ochezas ba'akev Esav. A bit later, of course, he circumvents Esav, he tricks Esav, v'yakaveni zepamayim, the okev is to let us circumvent, end around, as we would say. But he's at this point because he's grasping Esav's ankle. Now, the grasping of an ankle means one thing. It means struggle. It means vying for one common, it evokes racing, where you're trying to grasp at the space in the air, the person ahead of you, or it can be wrestling, where you're grasping physically. There's a physical combat. But that's a simple reading. Rashi, Bakev Esav, Rashi says, Simen she'inza maspik ligmor mahuso, achize omed v'not lehimen. Over this transition of power from Jews to Western civilization, Rome, the descendants of Esav, back to Jews. So there's a jockeying, a wrestling, a displacement, grabbing, holding, clutching. Obviously, the physical grasping and clutching evokes a political struggle. Finitziv, it's not really a struggle. It's the Jews having complementary roles to play in the evolution of Western civilization, in the evolution of Christianity, which all stems from Esav. And of course, by contrast, what role do we or do we not play regarding Islamic culture and regarding Muslims? So according to Rashi, this clutching of the ankle conveys two different roadmaps, two different game plans. One game plan is when the Jews are in Gullus, when they're in exile, lost sovereignty, lost homeland, lost their nation state. So we'll be holding Esav's ankle, not in competition, but holding Esav's ankle because we'll be hosted by Christian countries. We'll feel more comfortable. We'll be drawn after them. We'll be following in their wake. It's not a struggle. We're affiliating ourselves with our brother Esav. And the Nitziv quotes the Gemara in Gittin, Daf Yud Zayin, O betulach, O betulach debar Esav. Am Yisrael turns to Hashem and says, I want to be shaded in your shade, in your supervision, or at least in my brother Esav. There's a certain friendship and brotherliness that the Jews feel towards Esav that they don't necessarily feel towards Yishmael. That's evidenced by the Yisurim of not Lotisayiv Adomi, of not, which means that unlike the nations of Ammon and Moab, who also lived on the boundaries of Israel, who cannot become converts at any level, an Adomi can become a convert after the third generation, similar to a Mitzri. And the Mitzrim are given preferred status, at least compared to the Ammon and Moab, because they hosted us, and the Edomim, who stem from Esav, because they're our brothers, ki achichahu, lashon haposuk in Parshas Ki Teitzei, but that brotherly relationship, as strained as it was, as much as it was filled with rivalry and tension, led, at least the Nitziv's view, remember the Nitziv is operating in Velashin, in a clearly Ashkenazi-centric, European-centric, continental perspective, but we've been hosted, he feels, through Gullus, more, I wouldn't say warmly, but more frequently, more massively by Western civilization than we had by Islamic civilization. Now, certainly the numbers support that. As large as the communities were in Sephardic lands, they didn't outnumber the Jews in Ashkenazi or the communities in Ashkenazi territories. As far as I know, I'm not an expert historian, but it seems the numbers support it. It raises an interesting question. Who do we feel closer with? This Nitziv is a provocative statement. Who does a Jew feel closer with in 2020, after all of history has unfolded? Christians or Muslims? Well, I'm recording this in the West Bank, so One would say that much of the Christian world supports the state of Israel. Some of the Islamic world still doesn't support the state of Israel. So for someone that whose life is very shaded by this experience, it's a relatively easy-ish answer, but the question has to be posed beyond geopolitical terms. On the one hand, Yishmael developed a form of monotheism, which according to most Rishonim is pure, is not considered Avodah Zarah. Christianity is considered Avodah Zarah, because it still has residual paganism to it. Yishmael performs tshuva at the end of his life. We see no repentance of Esav. Esav is buried in Maaseh Machpelah, according to Chazal. His head rolls into Maaseh Machpelah. Yishmael is not. Most of our nevuos of Achris Hayamim and the great wars of the Achris Hayamim, the wars known as Gog and Magog and the apocalypse of Achris Hayamim, center around Esav, Edom, Rome, Western civilization, not as much surrounding Yishmael. Rome, of course, is responsible for the destruction of the Second Beis HaMikdash, launching the large galus. Yishmael less so. Yishmael, they play an ancillary role, as I'll talk about. They were torturing us when we left Yerushalayim in the days of Nebuchadnezzar, but they certainly weren't taking the lead. So it's an interesting question. Who do we feel closer with? I think in the modern world, if you're honest, some people feel there is some association between Jews and Muslims. Bris Milah. Bris Milah stuck with Yishmael. We have to imagine Esav had a Bris Milah because he was the son of Yitzchak, but it didn't become part of their culture. B'nai Yishmael, Bris Milah became part of their culture. That's what makes it so difficult to dislodge B'nai Yishmael from Eretz Yisrael, because B'schus Bris Milah will receive Eretz Yisrael. But certainly according to the Netziv, we are hosted, and I'll read the language because the language is so interesting, it's very pithy. B'shiflus uvegalus, when Yaakov is in Galus, we prefer Esav's hosting us. We prefer our brother. We share more genes with Esav than we do with Yishmael, because Yishmael is further up on the genealogical tree. At one point, the Netziv says, not so much in this piece, but in the complementary piece in Vayishlach, because other nations, and presumably he's referring to Muslims, are less civilized. So again, that's arguable. A lot of it depends upon which century you're living in. You could certainly make the claim, that sounds like a corroborated claim, that in the 19th century, when the Netziv is writing, so Europe feels more civilized, feels more advanced, feels more prosperous and more modern, and Arabia feels more backwards, sands, donkeys, camels. So certainly from the Netziv's vantage point, we want it to be with more civilized and less barbaric countries hosting us, and Europe was the seat certainly of the past millennia, the last 1,000 years of the development of civilization and technology, but not so much beforehand. So, according to the Netziv, what's striking is that there's a statement here, not about a struggle between Yaakov and Esav, but about Yaakov being drawn or affiliating himself with Esav, rather than, the Netziv doesn't say Yishmael, but rather than other nations. The second part of this image is not just when Yaakov is struggling in exile and dispersed, but when Yaakov has ascended and prospered. Then the Jews play a different role vis-a-vis their brother Esav, and that's to hold on to their foot, maybe more classic, more traditional, and to prevent overextension of Esav. Language of the Netziv, the Kasheria Yaakov Birum Hamaila, when Yaakov reaches his apex, his success, his triumph. Hareo Kimaha Oches Beregel Chavero, you're holding Esav's foot. Shelo yele chala, you shouldn't proceed or advance too quickly, too far. Kach moneahu gidulas Esav shelo yisgaber biyoser. Yaakov will always check the advance of Esav. What does it mean that Jews check the advance of Christianity? It's hard to see that in history. To a degree, I feel strongly that one of the first tremors within the great insurmountable Roman Empire, the empire built the last 1,000 years, was the Bar Kokhba rebellion. Because I see this as the continuous role of the Jews to defy human paper tigers, or human tigers that we proved to be paper tigers. We alone defied the Soviet Union, and then of course the Soviet Union fell. We alone defied Nebuchadnezzar, and then Nebuchadnezzar lost his empire within a few months. We alone stood tall in the face of religious fundamentalist terror, and how the world is coming around. So The role of Jews is to sound the moral voice, a lonely voice, Avraham Ivri, but ultimately the world falls in line because we are the moral sand barge of humanity. We're Chol Hayam, we're meant to play that moral role. And I believe that the moral resistance of Bar Kokhba in 130, around that time, directly leads to the crumbling of the Roman Empire in the next 300 years. Remember, some people would point to 171 as the start of the fall of the Roman Empire. Commodatus was the name of the emperor. I don't have the book in front of me. But typically, the Roman Empire falls. The date that people look to most is 410, when the Visigoths literally invaded Rome and ransacked Rome. So 130 to 410 is 300 years. Not a lot of time in the sweep of Roman history. So there is a real clear sense that the Jewish rebellion, though it was a failure and though it launched a long period of gallus, it participated in checking the Roman Empire from conquering the world. I think there's something else at play. It's not just the political and military stemming of the Roman Empire, but essentially Rome was beginning to cast its influence across this entire empire. It was one of the first, certainly the largest multi-regional empires, so the cultural influence, the cultural sway was very formidable. And Romans were paganists, not the classic pagans worshipping sun, worshipping stars, but they certainly worshipped physical gods. And they were casting that influence across the globe, Zeus and Apollo. And I believe that the interaction with the Jewish people, and that's why Chazal records some of the philosophical conversations between Rabbi Akiva and Tunus Rufus, between Romans and Tanoim. So they weren't just suppressing and persecuting the Jews, they were also studying the Jews and studying their culture. And ultimately that culture rubbed off on them. And ultimately when Jews rub off on non-Jews, the impact isn't just that they're converted to Jews, the impact is that the cultures that we rub off on or influence are swayed towards monotheism. So if I mention the tail end of the Jewish-Roman interaction and confrontation, 130, the Bar Kokhba Rebellion, and 410, the crumbling of the Roman Empire under the weight of the Visigoth and the barbarians' invasion, think about 313 AD, the Edict of Milan. Emperor Constantine accepts Christians, tolerates Christians, and of course 10 years later, 323, Christianity becomes the official religion of the Roman Empire. Of course, Christianity is a blend of monotheism and paganism, but it's certainly a massive, massive leap forward in the march towards monotheism. So I think that the role that the Jews will play in checking Esav, and this doesn't necessarily correlate to the Jewish success. That's why it's a little bit off from the Nitzitzit. It says when we're successful, we'll check Esav's advance. I think even when we're not successful, we intellectually and ideologically and theologically check the Roman Empire from descending into absolute paganism and drawing the entire world down into that rabbit hole of paganism. So I think it's a Nitziv that provokes, and I'll continue with the Nitziv of Yishlach, provokes our thinking. A lot of it has to do with the Nitziv's perspective living in Europe, living in European lands. But it reminds us that the events that take place in the delivery room in Parshas Toldos, when those twins were born, and Yaakov holding to Esav's heel, are essentially forecasting much of the Jewish role in history. I think Rashi already senses this, the famous Medrash that Rashi quotes, when Rivka receives the word from this prophet that she consulted with, that Shnei Goyim Bevitnech. So the word Goyim, which means nations, is written Gimel Yud Yud Mem Geyim Bevitnech. Geyim means leaders. So these are Antoninus and Rebbe, Rashi says. Shlo Pasko Me'al Shulchan. This is referring to Rebbe and Antoninus. This is Antoninus Pius, Roman emperor, right after the Bar Kokhba Rebellion. He's a good emperor, one of the benevolent emperors, and he was very friendly with Rabbi Danasi. And this led to a great period of Roman-Jewish rapprochement and the tranquility and the serenity to actually craft the Mishnah. So Rebbe was able to craft the Mishnah because of all the persecution and all the difficulties of the previous couple generations were now subsiding. So Rashi says that Rivka was told, you have two leaders in your stomach, two leaders in your room, Rebbe and Antoninus Pius. Why is that important? I mean, many, many descendants of the Jews and many descendants of Yaakov and many descendants of Esau. Why is there a special part of the prophecy reserved for two people who are so wealthy? I mean, they're important people, but after all, there's just two amongst billions. Why were they so important? I think that their lives are more symbolic, that their friendship crystallized this relationship between Jews and Christians. And essentially, if I want to just summarize the Nitziv, this isn't only a relationship of hostility and confrontation. It's a relationship of tandem cooperation. Christians will host Jews when they're in Galus, and Jews will prevent the excesses of the Roman Empire and turn Rome back into monotheism or pseudo-monotheism. So the rapprochement and the détente between Rebbe and Antoninus was reflective of a détente between Esav and Yaakov, that were, even though there'd be difficult pogroms and crusaders and holocausts, but essentially the Jews and the Christians would have supplementary roles, collaborative roles, and particularly from the Jewish perspective, we would check their advances and we'd also be hosted by them. Now the question is, how long does this last? I'm presenting it as if it's a historical roadmap that unfolds over thousands of years and dozens of centuries, but the name Yaakov doesn't really last, because in Parshas Vayishlach, Yaakov receives information from Esav's surrogate, from Esav's celestial representative, that he no longer needs the word Yaakov, and that it's if true to form believes that the angel is telling him, by the way, remember I told you that you're holding on, remember you thought you were holding on, you were born holding on to Esav's ankle because you wanted to be hosted? Don't worry, you're now Yisrael. You've proven that you have the gusto, you have the strength, you're robust enough to outlast even barbarians, because you defeated Kisarisa, Im Elokim, the Eman Hashem Vatuchal. If you can defeat me, then Jews throughout the centuries can live with aggressive, barbaric races and nations. And the Malach says, and by the way, you thought that you'd have to check Esav and prevent his excessive advance. No, you already defeated me, so you've already checked Esav. So in some ways, one way to read the Nitziv, let's just summarize the Nitziv in Vayishlach, is that everything that was put into play was only hypothetical. Hypothetically, Jews would be hosted by Christians, but once Yaakov defeats the Sar Shel Esav, we have enough strength and enough resilience to live with whoever we want. And hypothetically, Yaakov has to clutch Esav's ankle to prevent the excessive extension of the Roman Empire geographically, politically, or theologically, but now that he defeated Esav's angel, metaphysically, Esav will always be checked. I think that if I read the Nitziv correctly in Toldos, and that's why Yaakov continues to be called Yaakov, by defeating the Esav's representative or surrogate, Yaakov isn't dispensing with those tasks, he's just empowering and greasing the skids a little bit on those tasks. That those two realities, A, that we'll be hosted by Christians. You know what? We are hosted primarily by Christians throughout Galus, but we've proven our mettle, we've proven our strength, we've proven our formidability that we can be hosted even with more challenging peoples. So we have the confidence not to remain only within Christian lands. And even though that mission of checking the advance of Esav and his descendants and Western civilization in Rome is the task at birth for Yaakov, the task doesn't terminate when he defeats Esav's Malach. It's just that Yaakov's abilities swell. Yaakov's abilities augment because of this victory, because of this triumph. And that's why, even though from the angel's perspective, he's encouraging Yaakov to ignore the word Yaakov and just to call himself Yisrael, we still refer to him as Yaakov, and that struggle of Yaakov, both the need to be hosted by our brothers, in a way that I think is very resonant in the modern context, because so much of the return of the Jews to the state of Israel has been facilitated by countries of the West initially. Hopefully we're turning the corner on that one. And in addition, more recently, over the last 20, 30 years, by deeply, deeply religious Christians in America, the evangelicals and others who strongly, strongly support the Jewish people's return to Israel, a support which, of course, causes us much ambivalence, because their support for us is part of their messianic endgame. So it's certainly a controversial support. But Esav facilitating the Jewish experience throughout our exile was expressed or manifest by them hosting us. Now at the end of history, by Esav supporting the return of Yaakov to his own land, even though Yishmael stands in the breach. So, very, very fascinating mitzvah. Again, it's a very short and brief mitzvah, but it really unleashes and unlocks a lot of thought about Jews, Christians, and Muslims throughout history.